Hello and welcome to the 10th Manx Footy Pod of the 2019-20 season. Today myself and Dave,
hi everyone,
are joined by Alan and FA President Tony Meppett. Welcome back to the podcast HQ, Mepster.
Thank you very much. It's the same building, looking well, and you're looking well too.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. 50 Shades of Grey at the moment with a newborn child in the house. But
yeah,
but
you've had about 2 hours sleep for the last 3 weeks.
That's what people keep telling me, Meps. It seems like he's only 3 weeks now, but it seems a lot longer than that. But longer than 3 weeks, Dave. Amazingly, this is our 100th podcast.
How the heck has this happened, mate? Seriously.
I know. You'd think all the cease and desist letters we've got, we would have stopped by now.
But we've
kept going.
Yeah, Audio Boom haven't kicked us off the airwaves yet.
So I was looking at stats. 111 guests, including Meps, who's back for his second trip today.
He loves it.
We've had in the now 100 episodes. I think 36,000 listens, which is... mind-boggling.
Yes.
That must be more than just you, your dad, and
yeah. I think my dad listens to about 30,000 of those.
Any particular highlights for you?
Oh, every time we have Meps in, of course. Yeah. No, I mean, you've got the obvious choices where we were up in Ramsey for the away day.
Yeah.
We had Rory and Harry with their
in the Trafalgar pool room.
Yeah, having their specific talents.
Yeah.
Me interviewing Mark Wright was up there as well, which was a bit of a surreal experience. But they were all good. Obviously, the highlights listening to you every week.
No, I won't go that far. We had a first couple of weeks. We had, a letter or something in from Peel. One of the Peel fans saying it was cheaper than sleeping tablets. So we've set that bar.
Yeah, we still strive for that. Yeah,
that's good.
But anyway, you, any other
highlights? Oh, do you know what you say? I've enjoyed them all. We've always come out of every recording and said, "Oh, that was good, wasn't it?"
Yeah.
Some of them must have been. Yeah. Can't put my finger on
it's
it.
It's a scattergun approach, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, we've had some good. Jonesy's always good value, isn't he, when he comes in?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we can't.
He's got a face for podcasting, hasn't he?
Yeah, we can't forget Agent Rashid's influence on the podcast. He's been fantastic.
Yeah, and we must mention now there are the Agent Rashid Christmas special is coming again this year.
He's been badgering us for it, but it's.
Yeah. So I think that'll be about the 18th, 19th of December. That'll be hitting the podcast.
Christmas wave. Cracker, as they say.
Tony, we've got you in, obviously, to discuss football, but we're going to kick off as tradition dictates with biscuits. So Dave,
superb.
Dave was dispatched to the garage, weren't you? About 20 minutes.
Well, you busy making a wonderful video for social media.
Yeah. What have we got then, Dave? We've got these golden Oreos. I've never seen these. Have you had these before, Meps?
I've had these before.
Are
I'm
they
going
nice?
To keep them because I've been caught out with Mr. Cave doing this, where you have something to eat just before you're about to talk. And it can be a bit of a complication, but I've got better Oreos than that. And my good lady was going to get them, but she's having her hair done. But
right.
I'll send them to you, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised how good they are.
Look forward to that.
They're special.
Christmas is coming early, isn't it?
I know it is.
Right, yeah, so what, are you going to have one, Dave?
I will in a minute.
They're like a bit like a custard cream in sort of how they look, but I'd say taste-wise, they're a little bit sweeter.
Oof. Is that good or a bad thing?
Well, you know, it depends how sweet you like biscuits, doesn't
it? It's true. Do you reckon it'll be dunkable in a cup
of tea? Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think, do you drop them? They're a bit crummy.
Yeah, I think it's going to go everywhere.
Anyway, enough about the biscuits. Tony, after years of being vice president, how long were you vice president in FA?
I think I was 16 years.
16 years.
Wow.
Yeah. That's nearly as long as I've been here. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Get less for murder these days.
Exactly.
But you took on the main role at the AGM this year.
Yeah.
When did you want to take on that chop job? Because it is an arduous task at times, isn't it?
It is. To be honest with you, Tony Jones, who's been president, 23 years, his term had come to an end and he didn't want to renew it. To be honest with you, I turned the opportunity down. I was asked and I just said, not for me. Because as you know, you write bits in the paper and there are a lot of people out there who will agree with you and a lot of people who disagree. Same with the FA, and I just thought, you know, I'm getting a bit older, long on the tooth, do I want the hassle? So I said no, and obviously Steve Carter, who I work closely with at the FA, Steve is the other vice president. Steve's been vice for 10, 11 years or something, and Steve wasn't too sure either. And it was just really a chance conversation with Brian Callow and just said, why don't you go as president? I said, well, I don't know if it's for me, and he said, I don't think I've got respect for certain people out there because I got a lot of grief, and why should I do the job? But after speaking with Brian, who I trust implicitly, Brian said, allow your name to go forward, and then it just continued from there. Quite a few clubs got in touch and said, we'd support you, we believe in your beliefs, you're a football man, you're in connection with the club, and I'm not saying anything against Tony wasn't connected to a club, which to me worked well, because me and Steve are highly involved with Union Mills and Corinthians. He wasn't. So I just said, right, okay, I'll let my name go forward on one condition, Brian, that you will stay on as chairman of Junior League for 1 year, because I knew Brian wanted away from that one. And he agreed, and allowed my name to go forward, and I was unanimously voted in, which is an absolute honour, because I'm voted in by the clubs, which means a lot. It's not you just saying yes, and because you're the only one whose name's put forward, that you get the job. And I think that sort of opened my eyes how much faith the clubs have in possibly what I can do to make Manx football better.
Sort of just talk us through the role of president then. Some people might say it is a sort of a figure role, really. But there is lots to it, isn't there? You know, it's only you're juggling it with a job and doing your other bits and bobs. It is quite a, you know, you have a lot on your plate, really, don't you? With,
it does. I don't really do stress. I get sort of
thankfully.
I get fed up at times, and then I just back off. But I've got a very supportive wife who I could speak to about any problems that are coming up with football. And even though she hasn't got a clue about football, it's just if it's
a sounding board. Yeah.
If it's what you believe in, then you go for it. And she's fantastic for that. But it's obviously a front for the FA. To me, the chairman of the board, which is Steve Carter, that the board is the main group. Frank Stennett is the CEO, which is the day-to-day running the headquarters. Luckily, he's got a team around him. Kevin Maitland's been an absolute gem. And then you've got Sam Nelson, you've got Lewis Qualtro there. So they do the day-to-day running of football. As you say, I've got a full-time job. I'm a parent, and also look after or part of the team at Corinthians. So it's just to make sure that jobs are done. And I saw before I got the president's job, I could see one or two worrying things, and I just sort of started doing a bit of work on it because I'm on the board, and the board supported me to bring it forward, basically bringing, make sure individuals were staying in contact with Manx football and bring new people in. And Ed Walter, who's treasurer of the Junior League, he was standing down. Brian Callow was potentially standing down. And Steve Callister, who's huge in junior football, had stood down. So me and Steve Carter took Brian and Steve Callister out just to see if we could keep them on board. Brian was up for it. Steve Callister just basically straight away, what do you want from us? This is what we want, okay. But also, we'd like you to come on the FA board to bring the Junior League and Senior League closer together, which Steve agreed to. We've got new directors now in Jill Christian. We've also got Mike Murley with Steve Callister there, myself, Steve Carter, and also Frank, who's like the company secretary there. It's working really, really well. But I think it's just, I've always been approachable. I'm thick-skinned, so if people have got a problem, they could come to me if they want to, if they feel more comfortable like that, or go to Frank, and then somewhere along the line we'll try and sort the problem out if it can. Some of the problems can't be sorted out because it's a rule. We don't go against rules. So yeah, it's a responsible job, but I said I'd give it 2 or 3 months to just bed myself in. I haven't got a desk or anything, but just to understand what people are saying, and now we're starting to work on things. And this board are fully supportive behind, if you like, the president, the two vice presidents, because their connection to the football side, as where the board run the business.
So you told me you're working on a couple of things. Is there areas that you've pinpointed need, you know, looking at drastically? Now, we'll, obviously, we've had questions about, you know, the combi teams dropping out, and maybe player numbers aren't what they were. Is that something you're looking at, you know, at the moment, or is there other problems you think, or I need to tackle that first?
The biggest problem is safeguarding, child protection, because what's gone on in the English game, we don't want to happen in the Manx game, and the English FA are fully supportive with us to make sure that doesn't happen. Mike Murley's our, if you like, safeguarding champion, and Mike's working tirelessly behind the scenes. It's incredible. And, you know, there does seem to be a feeling out there that Manx football's dead, it needs revitalising. How can we do that? Okay, three leagues was the one that's being stirred around. I don't really know what Dave and yourself's view is, but I'm totally against it, because I think it will damage Manx football. It won't be repaired. And I thought this 2 years ago. If you look at the Premier League now and Division 2, it's probably the most exciting
that we've ever had.
Yeah. And we could sense this coming. Yes, look in the Premier League. You've got five or six. Let's get Laxey in there as well now because he deserved to be. We've got five or six teams. So that's six of the 13, if Castletown were in there, who are competitive and expected to be at the top. Mm. Unfortunately, Old Boys have slipped down a little bit. But the rest are all sort of equal. So you've got like two leagues in one. But what are the challenges? And the one I always hear is in my ear, it's from Paul Jones, is we always want to play a better standard to make us better. So those six or seven teams in the Premier League that are playing against the top teams are playing against the island's best players. So hopefully it'll make them better. Division 2 at the moment, and I hear your podcast and everything, it's the league of everything. And it is, because you've got Onken up there now, you've got Braddon, and the fixtures have meaning. But then you've still got those, if you like, six or seven in Division 2 who aren't there at the moment with the top six, but are playing against better footballers. So to me, it works. What's the point of having three leagues? Say, 899, I think it worked out. You've got your six top teams and then two teams that are going to get quite a few hidings. It's soon going to disappear. But the one we're working on at the moment, league management. Mm. Because let's face it, if football's not in a good place, the first thing you look at is fixtures. So we revamped it a couple of weeks ago, changing the Hospital Cup, Junior Cup around, and things like that. The start of the season this year has been a massive problem because we've lost three games.
Yeah.
It's going to be a problem to get the Railway Cup on. That's not our fault. The club's made that choice. But one that we're going to throw in March in the rules revision, and you'll like this one.
Yeah, you've got a cheeky smile.
Jim Cooper come up with this idea because he's vice chair at league management, is that the team that finishes third in the Premier League and the team that finishes third in Division 2 have a one-game playoff at the bowl.
Right.
The gate, you know, we'll have a look at it if we can, is go to charity.
Right.
And the winner of that game, winner takes all, is in the Premier League the following year. So if the team that finished third from the bottom wins, they were there anyway.
Yeah.
But it just gives the opportunity, because the bottom six, seven of the Premier League and the top six of Division 2 are very similar. Let's do it. Now, we'll put it forward to the clubs and the clubs will vote for it. But that's what we're going to chuck
in. I think they do it in the Scottish leagues at the moment, in the lower leagues. And that end of the season could be quite active, though, when you throw in Gold Cup as well.
Yep.
but it sounds very interesting.
It adds another thing for them to fight for, doesn't it? You know, which is great.
Well, you touched on the Railway Cup.
Yep.
Now, before we move on, where are we up to with that now? A couple of weeks ago, I said it's looking unlikely, isn't it, for Boxing Day?
Right.
And you say it's the late start, but also the weather's not helped in recent weeks, and we've had postponements from the Ireland games and stuff. Yeah. Realistically, can we get it on?
Don't know. The next 2 weeks, I was speaking to Dave about it the other day, the next 2 weeks is challenging, because that then comes up to the halfway point.
Yeah.
If the results go the right way, and I get my four, I've got them, because I got a rule change quite a few years ago that all the teams didn't have to have played the 12 it was then. It's got 11 this year.
It's mathematically done already.
Yeah, it's done. We've got the semi-finals due for the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
If we're close to it, we've got semi-finals on the 7th and rearranged fixtures. I will try and play a couple of games to get me four. If it's a no chance, then I'm not going to start altering fixtures, disrupt everybody else's to try and get them on Boxing Day. But what I normally do, and there's no set rule, as you see the games that are postponed, they're in a list.
Yeah.
And basically what I've always done is played them as listed.
Yeah.
It's not a rule, but everyone can see when they're going to play, and I can't be accused of favouring another club, which I would never, ever do. But if I can tweak those fixtures to get the Railway Cup on board, I'll do that, because I think the Railway Cup has to be played on Boxing Day if we can.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried it New Year's Day at Castletown, it wasn't New Year's Day, it was the three days later.
Yeah.
Reasonable crowd, it's on grass, but Boxing Day is the one.
It's the tradition.
It is. So that's what we're working on, and if we can get it over the line, we will do. But with the late start and the weather and everything else, you know, Corinthians have only played six.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And it being so competitive as well. You haven't got teams streaking ahead. There's, as you said, six teams potentially still having the chance of getting those four spots, isn't there?
Yeah, well, we've got Corinthians Lazio this week, and then Corinthians St Mary's the week after. But if you have a look at the rearranged fixtures of the other teams, they're all against the teams that you would expect to sort of do well. So it's going to be a big ask, but we'll try and get it on so you've got something to put in your paper after Boxing Day.
Cheers, mate.
The weather likes keeping you in your toes.
Exactly.
We should ask about your predictions, actually. We're talking about Railway Cup and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. We had a couple questions a bit later on, actually, about you went for relegation. Now, actually, in 4-5-1, don't you remember, you picked out Paul Rose and Castan. Obviously, Castan have fallen, by the way.
Yeah.
Paul Rose at bottom, so you seem Bob on at the moment. Are you sticking with them too?
I'm sticking with those two. Paul Rose, I feel sorry for, because I'm sure we might come on to in a question. Before the season started, Paul Rose were getting put out of their changing rooms, as were Douglas Athletic, because the building, the changing rooms had been condemned, and they just said it couldn't be used. Corporation said, we're not going to spend any money on it if we're going to build you a new facility. So, right, okay, so we picked it up at the FA, and this is another thing, your president's hat on, see what we could do. So we pulled them in, and I went down and met with Douglas Athletics representatives and police, and just looked around the building. Fortunately, I'm in the building trade, so I could understand what needed to be done. And I looked at it, and I said to the clubs, I reckon if you put £500 in each, we can turn this building round to be suitable for 1 to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to say both clubs supported it. We met with Corporation. Corporation just understood. But then comes the complications of volunteer work doing on it. Is the work going to be done? I've got plenty of experience. I've got 40 years of experience. I said, I'll make sure that the work's done to a good standard. And it was just amazing. I had an absolute ball down there with Karen Holzall, Mo Pausland. You've got Paul Henry, Ali Wood. They're all about 70 years of age, up ladders, painting, fitting wood.
Sounds like an amazing fly on the wall.
It was fantastic. And then Douglas Athletic came down one Saturday and set up the barbecue, and we're having burgers, and I absolutely loved it. And they got it over the line, and the corporation allowed it to use. We can come on to it later on, where we are with that facility now, but there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes by Lewis Quarto to make sure that we get a building down there that we want, and maybe what the corporation don't want. There's a bit of work to be done on that one.
So you can stick with Pulley, and on the field they've struggled, haven't they? They've only got one team.
Yeah.
They've gone into the Premier League, and, you know, other clubs have elected to play just the Combi side. So fair play, as Dave says, fair play to them. But I think they haven't got a point yet, Dave.
No, they haven't.
You're
looking at Ramsey Moran and Douglas Royal. I think Douglas Royal, with Fitzy there, they've got a lot of good young players there. So they've just got to win those games that they need to. Moran have got a good enough team. But I just think with Paul Rose, if Nigel Moody had been there, I'd probably be a little bit more positive. But with Joe Canepa, Owen Canepa, Owen Quayle, and people like that, they're good players. But Steve Priestnell, but I don't think Steve has been able to find that balance of player manager for Pulley, because there's so much responsibility on his shoulders on field that it affects off field.
There's a rumour Mark was back the other week.
There was a rumour, we haven't seen
him on the score sheet, but yeah, he would be a massive plus for them at this point, wouldn't he?
He's sitting there twiddling his thumbs, but if you don't want to play, you don't love the game, then why? But you know, with Paul Rose, I just think with new changing facilities, if it gets a go ahead, I'm sure it will, and just a change, it was just a shame. And I read your articles on it. What happened towards the end of the season? There was some things that went on at Paul Rose that has no place in football.
No.
And it's not Paul Rose Football Club's fault or the committee's fault. And I think those situations have been addressed. It's a rebuild job. You've only got to look at Braddon from last year.
Yeah.
Tells the story.
And it's a shame as well, because Paul Rose had worked so long to get into the Premier League.
Yeah.
And they've been the Neely men, along with the likes of Colby, for so long, and it taken them, I can't remember the last time they were in the top five, but it was a long time.
Yeah.
And they got there, and now hopefully, you know, it looks like it's only going to be a season, doesn't it?
It is, and
it's a hard division to get out of. Division
it
two.
Is. There's a lot of financial pressure on football clubs as well, because everything costs money. When you look at the facilities on the island, they're brilliant, But with Kirby Estates, Andy Campbell, unbelievable support for them. So there's no worries that way. It's just getting a good manager in, and hopefully they can rebuild. Because you think back over the years of the quality footballers that have come out of Paul Rose.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
My word. Yeah. It's a place to where you want to coach lads because they're down there kicking the balls around the big area, and it's all self-taught and fantastic.
Looking at the top of the league, you were plumped for Corinthians, unsurprisingly, to win the
title.
Peel, St Mary's and St George's have completed your top four. Do we still think the White Mighty Whites can do it? After the opening day of the season, lost St George's, they bounced back in France now, to be honest.
Blaine's doing a great job, isn't he, so far?
Yep. Well, he was. It was a shame to see Danny go. Why he didn't go a year ago, I don't know, because he was offered a job in Dublin, and he said, no, I'm on a mission here with the football, I'm staying. And then I think it was the final, listen, Danny, this year, you either take it or what. Yeah. He's from that part of the country. And, you know, Danny was basically in tears telling us that he had to go, and I said, listen, mate, just you go. And within the following day, Blaine was appointed, because Blaine's a clever cookie when it comes to the game and understanding everything. And when you look, he's got Ben Qualtro, Steve Burns, and Joe and Watney around him to do the coaching. And these, a lot of the Corinthians players have been coached by Paul Jones and Lee Dixon as well. They know the game inside out, but Blaine has done a terrific job, picked up. It was a brilliant result against Peel. We were under the cosh a little bit in the second half. Burnsy decided to go for an early bath, as he usually does, which is a shame, because Burnsy's improved so much in 2 years as a footballer. But can we do it? I don't know, but we're in a position where we've certainly got an opportunity, and the young lads, some of them are playing out the skin at the moment, and they're a big game coming up against Laxey, big game against St Mary's. Then they can say, yeah, we're getting there.
What about the best league in Europe? Can you pick a winner from that? Or you went for Ayr. Now, they got a great result at the weekend, beating Union Mills. But Onken are the ones that are currently top of the pile.
Yeah, I watched Onken against Braddon. Braddon were leading 3-1 at one stage, and it was a right horrible night, lashing down and windy.
It was at the
bowl,
wasn't it? They played at the
bowl. Exactly, played at the bowl. And I just watched them, and they play with a lot of desire. Onken Braddon have got a lot of flair players there. The O'Neill boys will come through, and David Rees has done a terrific job at Onken, and Ayr United, it's starting to come through now, isn't it? If you look at the team sheet from last week,
Sean
Curley, you've got Dean Tate in there, Johnny Shields, absolutely skilly, strong side.
Yeah,
but Stephen Fox as well. They've got a plan at Union Mills, what they want to do. Sam Kane hasn't sort of played properly yet because he's been injured. But when you look at the guys that they've got there to score goals, and the players that signed from Matt Kane, sort of one who came back, and there's others Luke, come back in. Luke Booth, there's Carl Uren. They're a really strong side. So, yeah, I have to. Ramsey Centre have come off it a bit now, though. But they're not too far away with points, and Foxdale are chipping away behind the scenes, aren't they?
So you could throw a tablecloth over them, wouldn't you? There's not many points between the top sort of eight, really.
A couple of wins and all of a sudden you're right back in the mix.
But it makes it great, doesn't it? And we just said it's probably the best season, shaping up to be the best season.
Well, it is, and I asked at the start of the season, and they didn't come back, so I didn't push it, was do we switch the Paul Henry to the halfway stage of the season? The club's changed it a few years ago, but a couple of people sort of mentioned it. I thought, well, let's put it to the clubs, because that's what we try and do. We don't make the decisions. We sort of propose what we want to do, put it to the clubs, like FC Allemagne, put it to the clubs and just see if they want it, and let them vote for it. We don't know everything, but we're in a position to put things in place where we can try and get things over the line.
Well, let's drop that name in very nicely there. Segues in nicely. FC Allemagne, what are your thoughts on it all?
I'm a supporter of it. It was quite funny, actually. This is where it all stemmed from. I was out for a meal. Steve Burns and Les Nicol, big friends of mine, were out having a meal. And I knew this meeting had taken place between the possible new committee of FC Isle of Man. And I was sort of told everything that had gone on. But I'm not one of these that are going to go back and blab whatever the FA. It was just, I want to know what's going on. So I was sitting there having a meal with Steve and Les, and the conversation was just not happening, which is so unusual. And anyway, we come at the end, and all right, we're going to get the bill. And I says, "Are you not going to tell me about this meeting on Friday then?" "What meeting's this?" I said, "The meeting about FC Alman." "What meeting's that?" I says, "Come on." So I just give him a little taster of what I knew, and he said, "How do you find that out?" I says, "Doesn't matter, Mepster finds out." "So what do you think about it?" I said, "I'm not against it." I says, "If it's going to be good for Manx football, and we can help at the association, I would hope we will help." And I wasn't president then. So the following day, bang, 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 an email come through from Paul Jones, "Can I come and see you?" Since then, he spent a couple of nights at my house talking about it all. And Paul's been very honest, and that's why he's got me on board. He hasn't given me any wild story, and that's why I think FC Isle of Man will hopefully work, because of the honesty and because of Paul. And when you've got Dicko, Burnsy, Gary Waitman, Raj, and other people involved in there, it's good. But my word, I wouldn't want to be looking for the amount of money they're going to be looking for.
No, but as you say, it's the team to do it. If it's going to happen, it's going to be these boys, isn't it?
Yeah, and the, it just showed, when it came to the board, unanimous bang, here, get it to the clubs. Yeah. We've moved all sorts of things to get them in there. And then when it came to the vote, I had to say to Paul, you're going to have to sit out the room because we need an honest vote, honest words. And Paul sat in the room, and it went on for quite a while. It was about an hour.
Oof.
And then, anyway, 25-1. There's two clubs out there, which was St John's and Ramsey Youth Centre, I think it was. But the Junior League and that could vote. And I walked into Frank's office and just said to Paul, "You better come in, and just to let you know." I had to tell him. I said, "It's all happened. It's pretty unanimous." And when he came in, well, the smile was just growing as he walked in and came in, and he was so appreciative. And I'm delighted for the clubs, and let's just see. I just hope we get the support, because when you look at the Isle of Man games, we don't get the support. It's basically could be the same team, and I think it's a crying shame for Manx football. I really do.
Why do you think that is? Is it lethargy? People want to go to the pub, or people want to watch the English Premier League? What's
I don't know, Andy. The way I look at it, people keep saying to me about Manx football's in a bad place and everything else like that. I cut it down to three things. Facilities. We played at Salford City when Steve Burns was manager. We also went to Kirsten Ashton. Salford City, I've got a video somewhere of the changing rooms. They were horrendous.
Mm.
Now, they're... Since then, it's all changed with the class of 92, whatever it is, have come in. So that's one. Two, volunteers, committee people and all that run clubs. Incredible amount of people who don't get to play. They just pick up the dirty kit, sweep the floors or stuff.
Mm.
Three is the players. There's your problem. There's no loyalty from a lot of players. When you look at it this year, we've got one player who's transferred three times. We've got a second one who's trying his hardest at the moment to transfer, and the FA have stopped it.
Right.
And you've got, I think it's about five or six players who transferred twice.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. No. That is not good. And it's also commitment from players. Subs. Subs have to be paid. Corinthians is £25 per month.
Yeah.
It's you're training on Astro pitches and that, you're getting your kit washed. It's absolutely nothing. And then fines come in. If you get fined, it's £10. Pay your £10, but suddenly you get fined again. £20, you're feeling hard to do it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the attitude of the players has to change, and I want to see more and more loyalty, and that's something that I'll be looking to see if in the FA if we can get that through to players. But
do you think some of the clubs maybe have got sort of rested on their laurels a bit? You know, football for a long time was the prominent sport in Isle of Man, and players came to them. Now, we've talked about it on the podcast before. It's competing against so many different sports now. We talk about the cycling success, hockey, rugby, cricket, you know, there's so golf. People are, what do they call it, when you're rich, time poor these days, aren't they? And maybe football clubs haven't had to fight for players, maybe like other sports, or tension like other sports have in the past. And now, when they need players, they don't know how to do it. Do you think that's a possible thing?
It could be. One of the sort of common conversations that I have with people is like St Mary's. You know, league champions last year, could be league champions this year. No junior setup.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're taking players from all the clubs around the island. Is that their problem? No, it's not. If the players want to go, you go. But when you hink at it, the year before they won the league, they finished ninth.
Mm-hmm.
And we all worried at the association whether they could survive and stay in there. I look at my club. you know, we moved up to Bala Fletcher in 2011, and we had a plan. We get criticised because we've got so many young players there. Why don't you share them amongst other clubs? They have the opportunity to go wherever they like. They choose to come to Corinthians the way it's ran. The friendship that they have with the coaches, which is important. And the big thing about Corinthians, and I think it's the best way to be, if we win, we win, we lose, we lose. That's at junior level. You look at us in the league tables, we're there or thereabouts, but we're nothing like Alaxia or Nonken or something like that. And, you know, I think the parents and the players respect that, and we've got some great sponsors at junior level. But, yeah, there are some clubs out there who think they've got the God-given right, and you've got to graft for it. You have to put some work in, and as I say, there's some superb volunteers out there who pull it together for their clubs.
And the other thing I think we've touched on before, are we in fact lucky over here that we've got this many clubs putting out this many sides? If you took us and put us, parachuted us to somewhere in the English, you know, FA regions, there wouldn't be this many clubs for the size of population.
Andy, the dropout rate in England is colossal. the recent game that we played was at Flint Town, where we played them twice on the Friday and Saturday. Yeah. And I met one of the guys there, and I said, have you beaten the Isleman before? He says, yeah, I used to come over in the Easter and play for Blue Union, you know, in the Easter tournament, where we've had 16 teams coming over and playing in the competition. And I said, how's football over there? Because we seem to be getting a little bit of negativity over here. He says, we're losing leagues by the month. Where Sunday football used to be there, we've hardly got any now. It's just the way it's gone. And the English FA know that. When you look at a lot over there, because my daughter being at Sheffield, I've taken on a lot on board what's going on in Sheffield and look around at the sports complex and stuff like that. And a lot of the, whatever they call, council over there, pitches are now not rented because you can't pay the money or whatever. We're very, very fortunate in the Isle of Man that we've got great facilities, and we've been able to retain our 26 clubs, even though this year we've got a couple more struggling, and we've tried to work with them, but hopefully they'll get that right. But there is a bit of a downslide on football in UK, and we'd like, I think we need some more funding. And Lewis Qualtro has had a big meeting with the English FA this week, and it looks like we're going to be able to tap into some more funding, which will help the clubs, because step seven, we're nearly over the line for step seven. There's a few clubs there got to improve their grounds. Hopefully they'll give us a little bit of a leniency, and we can get the money to them and get them up. And I'm talking big clubs like Rushing. I was speaking to Dave Farragher last week, and oh, we haven't got toilets for the changing rooms, we haven't got toilets for outside. It's easy on the end of the changing room, flat roof building, you can extend them into the two changing rooms, and the middle bit could be the toilet, job done. Football Foundation's there with multi millions.
Sounds like you could build it.
to give to the game. And you know, okay, a club has to support it 50%, like Football Foundation is, but you can't expect things for nothing, and hopefully we can pull a few things off.
Exciting times.
It is.
And we've got lots of questions too, right?
We have. And you were talking about, you know, volunteers and people that get, go above and beyond for the clubs and stuff. First questions are in from Paul Hatton, obviously a legend within football.
Certainly is.
He says, doing my research about Corinthians, what influence did stalwarts Dick Ward and Dennis Kane have on your time at the club? Two stalwarts who kept the club in existence during the dark days of the 1970s.
Massive. Start off with Hattie. Well done, Hattie. He's working on our book because it's our 90th year next year. And he's on it. And he keeps phoning me up and telling me all this. And I'll know the book. By the time it comes out, I'll know what's going on. Incredible man. Incredible drive for football. But Dick Ward, Dennis Kane. Dennis Kane was there when I started playing. Dennis was treasurer. Did a great job. And I remember the restaurant up in Onken. It's not there now. Molly's. And they were dark days. Early 80s. Financially, we weren't in a good place. The books weren't tallying up, and it was just the bills were coming in. And I've told the story before, but I'll cut it short. Dennis came away from it. John Hanley, who owes Terrace Chippy and Port Jack Chippy, John came in and helped us through things. And then he got to a stage where I can't do any more here. We were 300 quid in debt. At the meeting at the Athol pub, he just said, I'll give you £300 to clear your debt, and there's £300 to kick things off. It's up to you guys. Wow. So Dick Ward, who I think was mayor then, because he was mayor twice for Douglas, Dick took it on himself, and Dick really didn't have connection to our club at that time, but he had a huge sort of interest in the club and a great brain for it. And I was like his little apple, and I just went in and helped, and we got it together, and you know, the rest is history. But Basil Quiggan as well, I have to remember him, because Basil was 80 when I started playing football in 77, and incredible guys. We got an awful lot to thank Dick and Dennis. My plan is, because we've done a lot of work up there, is just in front of the Joe Green Memorial, we're going to put a bench there for those three.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
And I've already got the words for the stone. It's just to say where we are because what have you three gentlemen have done for this club. Great guys.
Hattie's next question, he says, what were the motivating factors, driving forces to relocate to Bella Fletcher?
A bit of everything. As you know, we've got a strand committee. I think it's 10 years now. At our AGM, we just go, proposal is that everyone stays in place and off we go. Everybody pulls their weight up there. Mark Adams, Les Nicol, Jason Corkle, Stan, as everyone knows him, Karen Walker, Steve Corran. There are so many people there who give up so much time. And we got the opportunity, and we met down at the Crow's Nest, you know, where the coffee shop is up the top there, with Jeff and everyone else from Sports Council, and just said there might be some land coming available. And the only reason that came available is because the prison was built in Jerby, because that was where they wanted to put the prison. Oh, you up for it? We said yes. Royal Our Neighbours said yes, and Vagabonds, they were looking to get them off so they could have that land. And we went for it, and big bills coming in. Big bills, but we've sort of got over that problem by doing camping, and that has allowed us to progress. And our next one we want to do now, we're looking at, and everyone will have to work together up there because we all lease the site, is to put a full size 3G pitch on the bottom. Wow. We've been in discussions with the English FA. The English FA are all over it for us, they will help fund it for us. But the land is leased to Royals, Corinthians, and Vagabonds, so we'll work around what we can to make it happen. But it's not going to be necessarily for Corinthians, it's going to be for Manx Football. Right. We're all keen to make sure that that happens, and we'll set up a separate company, and no money would ever come out of it to the benefit of whoever's involved. So that's what we're after.
Fantastic,
yeah.
4G pitches are like the golden egg over here, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're very scarce.
It'll be the same surface as the bowl.
Right.
And
full size?
Full size. We can get it in.
Full size, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Rails around it, everything. We'll try and get a little area where we could put some seating in. Changing rooms.
Available to play fixtures on it?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what we're after. It's for Manx Football. That's what our club are keen at. Douglas Royal, we've spoke to Douglas Royal. You know, and we just see Vagabonds are quite happy as long as they can come and train on it, because they've got two pitches up their floodlit already. So they've got what they want, but it's for sport, for Manx Football. But obviously we need to charge to pay the bills, and also make sure we've got the money in the pot to resurface it.
So we could be seeing more Super Sundays, Super Saturdays, you know, having multiple matches on, like cup matches on for charity and things maybe, or...
Yeah, we're not in competition with the bowl. Alice Watson's just been over. She's like taken over from Mark Hardcastle, and the Isle of Man is crying out for another 3G. I know people are going to say in Douglas again. We've got the land.
Yeah,
we've done tremendously well to get it playable. 3G would just sort of finish it off.
Would be fantastic.
Great for Manx Football.
One of your many hats you've talked about is of course this Manx Radio's football pundit. We've had a question in from Manx Football podcast super fan Dave Matheson, haven't we, Dave?
Yeah, he's asking, what do you think of the recent changes by Manx Radio to the football shows that have worked so well for so long?
I'm absolutely gutted. I'm gutted the way it's gone. I don't know if you heard the first two. Chris Cave is just an incredible presenter. When Tim, Tim stood down, and I just thought, okay, is this the time for me to leave? Because, you know, you get stick, but you're putting your head above the parapet. And Tim just said, well, you just hang in there, because I love Tim to bits. He's become such a close friend. And he just said, well, you just hang in there for Chris. And I coach Chris. Chris went to school with my son. Mm. You know, he was 24 when I started working with him at the radio. And I did it with him, and it's just been a ball right the way through. For such a young man to have that confidence in what he does, which is brilliant. Unfortunately, Manx Radio have lost him because he leaves after Christmas.
Yeah.
But you are never going to keep him. He's so, so good. And a great person. But when this new programming came in and Chris explained it to me, and I just said to Chris, this is an absolute disaster for our sport. And he said, yeah. And he spoke to Alex Brindley, because Alex is the program controller, and Alex said, I'm going to stick with it. For whatever reason, I don't know. Anyway, you know, I wouldn't fall out with them, because we've got a lot to thank Manx Radio for, and hopefully they'll look at it again. Because you guys cover sport and write it down, and I get the papers and I read through it, and I know everything about sport. I think Manx Radio have lost that now, because they haven't got enough airtime to do it. It's not because Chris doesn't want to do it. They haven't got enough airtime. And the first 2 weeks, well, the first week was a bit of a disaster, because at 4:30, the games have only been finished 15 minutes.
Yeah, because we're still on half twos.
Half twos, we couldn't get the scores in. And then the second one, well, that was just absolutely farcical. And after I did it, and I watched Chris do the programme, and I was just absolutely amazed how controlled and composed he stayed. That stuff was flying in everywhere. But I just said to Chris, I don't think I could do this anymore. I'm not a quitter. You know, the challenges I accept and I'll hit full on. But I said, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Anyway, they've tweaked it a little bit. They've gone 5 to 6 on Media Wave. You know, we've got the Saturday afternoon show, which we can bring in whatever, which is great. We keep up to date. The Friday show, 6 till 6:30, that's fine. They've altered the time. Football Focus is a massive loss, and take the opportunity to thank Malcolm Blackburn for giving the opportunity, because, again, Malcolm just said, if you had the opportunity, something in football, what would you do? So I'd love a chat show, a bit like you guys, to let the people who participate get their view over. And he sponsored it. And Malcolm just phoned me up. He said, I've done it. I've sponsored it. The show's there. Make it work. And I think we did.
It did.
Yeah. I think we did.
Yeah.
And I used to always say about the guests, the show's about you. We're quite happy to ask one question. Fire out all the answers, and you know yourself, you get people in who are nervous or whatever, but when they leave, they're buzzing.
Yeah.
Because they've given their view. The preview show is the big loss for me, the 12:30. I really do hope that Manx Radio revisit it. They've changed the whole programming, not just sport, everything else. Not for football. You've got Sam Spooner, who's a dialogue of information for hockey.
Yeah.
Dave Christian, who's unbelievable, motorbikes, rugby, whatever you want. And it's not fair on us.
No.
Because it's like radio or whatever, or reading an article in the paper. If it gets you, you read it. If you don't, you don't bother. Same as a radio. If you don't want to listen to football, don't put it on between 5 and 6. So I hope that they revisit it, because it's a nation station. They should be covering everything. We have to listen to things that maybe doesn't appeal to us. But sport, there's a mass of people out there who want to hear the results and stuff. And unfortunately, time has been taken away from us to supply that information.
Dave also asked, doesn't he, Dave?
Yeah, he also said, would you consider moving to Energy FM or Free FM if it meant having the original slots on FM?
I wouldn't, because I'm a loyal person right the way through with everything I do. And I couldn't do that to Manx Radio. I'd just call it a day, whatever. Someone else could do it. That's not a problem. But I know what they're thinking. I know I'm getting put under pressure from the clubs at council, because luckily Manx Radio have moved it a little bit. But they feel that if Manx Radio aren't interested, it's not out of badness to them, then maybe we should look elsewhere, because cup draws have to be done live on the radio. So, no, I couldn't do it, but it'd be up to the association. They could quite easily turn around and say, well, if Manx Radio can't sort of help us in it, then they might have to go somewhere else, but hopefully it doesn't come to that.
Rory Poole, our man in the north.
Yeah, our Combi correspondent.
You've already asked this. He says, will you miss Chris Cave?
I will.
Yeah.
Big time. He's a big friend, always has been. He's an absolute gentleman, way above his years the way he is, and highly thought of in Manx Radio, and I think highly of all the staff as well. They've always helped me, but I'll miss him, and I don't know who's going to take over.
Mm-hmm. We have to say he's a star at Woking football, isn't he, Andy?
Yeah. Played with us the other week, put us to shame. So wish him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Chris. Yeah,
happy birthday, Chris.
He got his Lars Bohinen Nottingham Forest replica shirt. I think he bought it for himself. But
yeah, his life is complete now. Though,
yeah. So. Next question's in from Mark Adams at Meps. He says, do you still enjoy collecting cocktail parasols and sink flowers?
That'll be a trip that we went on. Mickey Williams, Keith Lunt and everyone else in Southport, Tim Calladine.
He did put hashtag Southport in the tweet.
Yeah, all there. And we went away, play a couple of games. It was fantastic in the hotel, and there was this big flower arrangement in the hallway, and suddenly, for some reason, about 3 o'clock in the morning, it was next to me in bed. I think one of the boys had picked it up and brought it up, and all sorts. Yeah, they were great trips, but it was an expensive one because we had to pay for the flowers to leave in bed.
Next question from James Clegg. He says, what was your favourite song on the Foresters jukebox?
There was all sorts. I tell you what, that was a great pub in there, the Foresters. Because
I remember going a couple of times, but I think it was closed shortly after I was legal age.
Oh, it's a great place because the two bars, and like Joyce and Nina. Joyce was a landlady. Nina, Jerry Hicks, and Ray Hicks' mum were bar in there. And even on Mondays, Joyce used to lay this Buffy on Fit for a Prince, and we used to sit up there and do it. And there was music on and darts. And you know, when I think of it, I'd come home from football and the showers were poor up at Nobles Park, so I had muddy knees. You'd have two or three beers, and you go home and you get changed. You wouldn't have had a shower because you'd have a couple. And then, Tina or whoever, Andrea Burns, there was all loads of us. So what are we going to do tonight? Back down to Foresters. And you just wouldn't connect. We've been playing darts and Dukie, and we've had some great nights down there. And to me, that's been lost a little bit in clubs now.
Yeah, well, I suppose we touched on it there a bit, but with the drink driving rules and stuff like that, you know, that we're condoning it, but people just don't go out, tend to go out, and it's a lot across a lot of sports, I'd say. It used to be you go to the pub with your opposition number, maybe, or with the opposite team, and I don't think clubs are doing that now, unless they've got a clubhouse on the scene, which your clubs are, like Ramsey Rugby Club or whatever, or Douglas, but I just don't think it happens now, mate.
I agree, it upsets me a little bit, because you see some clubs who lay on pasties and sausages and everything else, and just say to your opposing club, listen, got food and that in there. Even if you go and have a Coke, you have half an hour with the players, have a little chinwag or whatever, drink and driving is key to it all, get that. But clubs do put it on, and unfortunately, you know, people don't bother going back, which is a shame.
Do good burger and chips up at Balfetcher.
Kaza looks after you.
Chris Clark, our man in New England, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah. He says, this is a tough one for you, Maps. What is your all-time Manx football 11?
I'll go with 50. That's hard wrong. You have to have a bit of time on that one, but we've done it once before at Manx Radio. I'm a bit of an era person, like sort of 80s, 90s, whatever. John Ward would be my number one. My back four, if I remember, picked Colin Purvis at Old Boys, who's the chairman. Colin was a great right full back. On the left hand side, I'd have Gary Coxon, because Diesel, as he was known as, unbelievable player. My centre backs is a little bit tougher, because you've got to look at Nigel Shimmin, Sean Quay, Johnny Myers, Sam Kenny, those to throw in there. So they'd be amongst it. Midfield, Rob Wakenshaw, but you know, Rob was a super pro when he came over here, so you've got Rob. But then you look at people like Frank Jones, you've got Chris Bass, Johnny Palmer. Then up front, you've got people like Chris Higgins. Who else have you got in there?
Wanky.
Peter Langridge, I'd have in, no problem. Goal scorer. You know, there's a lot of good players around. Even, you know, when I look at it, Kieran McNulty, I'd have him in there. Chris Bass Sr.
Yeah.
He had a wicked left peg on him when him and Rob Wakenshaw were playing together. So, yeah, there's many, many. It's a real difficult one, but there's a few names for you.
Who would be your manager? Could you answer that?
My manager?
Who would you manage?
For that team? I'd have to go with Bassey Sr.
Yeah?
I'd go Bassey Sr. He's an absolute head case. And I mean that in a nice way, because me and Chris have had some real sort of coming togethers. And whose birthday was it? Was it Leslie Ingham's birthday? I think it was. And obviously Bassey's related to all of them. We'd had a bit of a spat that afternoon. And it was down under the Admiral's house, and we went in, and I saw Chris there, and he gave me the little looks. I thought, what's that for? So I thought, I'll give you the looks as well. And people even saying, listen, don't start off here. And I'm not a fucking person. And anyway, by the end of the night, we're hugging each other, and Bess makes up. That's what Bessie does to you. He's a great guy, and what he's done in football is will never be matched.
No. Next questions, Dave.
Coming from our legendary correspondent, Agent Rashid. He says, hi, Anthony.
Yeah. Without a H, yeah. Rashid, get it right.
Drinking from my mug, I presume.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Are there any players that you've seen playing around that you thought were really good, but they perhaps never made the jump to a bigger team to be better known? Tough question.
There's quite a few of those over the years. I'm trying to think now. I'm all for loyalty. So if you're a really good player and you're playing in a lower side, if you're happy there, stay there. It's a bit like the Premiership in England. You've seen some really top players who've gone to other clubs, better clubs, and it hasn't happened for them. Sanchez won. I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
He's rubbish. Yeah. So they're there, but I'm just trying to think through. Not really, no, because I think over the years, I think what happens if you're a good player, then you want to play with the best players. And I've heard in Steve McBurn's time as manager, Kevin Manning's time as manager, and also Paul Jones's time as manager, I have never, ever heard them say, unless you're playing with one of the top sides, I'm not going to select you. That has never happened. They will pick on ability. The only one person I probably did spot, and I told Kevin about him, and he was a Division 2 player then, was Stephen Quine for Union Mills.
Right, yeah.
And I just said to Kev, I said, I've seen a number 9 today, and I just think he might be the player that you're looking for. And Quine came into the Ireland squad and actually did very, very well.
We were talking about him last week with the Mills lads. And
good player.
Yeah, he said, what was his first touch? They were like a Max Berbatov, they said.
Yeah, yeah.
And a nickname I've given to John Hagedorn. And,
seasons.
Next question is from Agent Rashid. He says, who's the best Manx footballer in the last 20 years? No pressure.
Easy, Johnny Palmer.
And now a managing guru.
Yeah. Johnny Palmer, everyone knows that he is one of my favourite players. The only thing is with Johnny, I think he wasted his career a little bit. He had the opportunity to maybe turn pro at Tranmere, and Johnny's not quite there with it. And he was like that as a footballer, because I used to do it to him. We always said, you know, with Johnny, not necessarily a bad tackle, but just go in and let him know you're there. And then for the rest of the game, he's trying to get you back. And
head's gone,
you know. Yeah, exactly. But absolutely skill, and it even followed on in the Masters. And he came to play for me at Corinthians Masters. You know, I know Johnny well, and he came in and he says, "You haven't got a clue why I've signed for Corinthians, have you?" I says, "I haven't, Johnny, enlightened me." And he says, "You're the nearest club to the hospital." And that's what he said. And then he had these boots that cost him 15 quid with JP on the back.
Yeah.
And he was gutted that the shinies cost more than the boots. But Johnny's something special. And that even filtered through to Masters football, because I watched him ping someone in the Masters, even though, you know, the legs go on the 35, 45 year olds. He is a special player. And if Johnny had the mindset, I just wonder how far he could have gone, because I think he could have done it.
Good question.
Very good. Now you've obviously already mentioned him. He's on the league management committee. I think Jim Cooper.
Yep.
Wants to know, what's the best game you've played or commentated in or on?
Best game I've played in would have been against Jim, Sam Kenny, and all big team then. It'd be early 80s, and Alan Perkin the week before pinged one in from the right hand side, top at Nobles Park, going down towards Douglas Royal's old pitch. And Robbie Quinn was in goal, and the following week I did near enough the same thing, and I'm playing centre back, and I belted one in, and we beat them, and then we went on. So I really enjoyed that one. The one to commentate the most, two, the Cambridge game was the Interleague final.
Yeah.
Myself and Tim, it was live on the radio, and it was just mental. Me and Tim were leaping up. We had a proper commentary box and everything, and we just went mental. And I, the night before, it was Stevie Ingham's 40th. And I said to him, listen, Steve, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to fly in because I'm going to watch Ironman and against Cambridge. who was with me then? Bassie Senior. Bassie, I'm coming with you, Mebs. Right, okay. Nick Ingman, I'm coming. Steve Ingham, I'm coming. It's your birthday, I'm coming. Yeah. Cubby was there, James right. Cubbin, he came. And Alan LeMay. And we all went to bed about 2, got up at whatever, 5, flew in and watched that game. That was brilliant. But the one to actually really hit home was over here, was Peel against Paul Rose in the FA Cup at Pulley.
The penalty shootout.
Penalty shootout.
Stuart Morris.
Stewie Morris, what a hero.
Yeah.
What a hero, because...
Simon Pickering, wasn't yeah. it? I think he missed it. He saved the penalty from yeah. him in the... And one of the goals was it was Danny Skilligan, wasn't it?
Danny Skilligan, yeah.
Absolute belter, wasn't yeah. it? Half volley or something.
You've got it.
Yeah, it was a great. It was going dark. Half of Paul Rose were out, wasn't it?
They're all in a circle, and it was like it was 1-0 Peel, 2-0 Peel. Pulley had missed the 2 penalties, and then it went through. Then it went to sudden death. You know, and all the crowd and everything in the centre of the pitch, and it was just going on forever. And I know a chap had did some work for Sean Craig up north.
Right.
And Sean said he was driving with his kids and that in the car. He had to stop. He said, the game had me totally taken in, and he had to stop and listen to it. And I described it, you know, how it was happening and everything that was going on, the emotions. Yeah, well, that was brilliant.
I was at that game as well. And I remember when Stewie saved that penalty, yeah, and yeah. you went to try and get an interview with him, and just suddenly there was just it was like last year's Railway Cup final and Tom Wood.
Yeah.
It was like that. It was mob, wasn't it? And yeah. you were trying to do the interview in the middle. It was a great game, and as you say, it was going dark. There was people with their lights, the car lights on. It had everything.
Yeah, yeah, it was brilliant.
Next question is from Les Nichol.
Yeah,
who already mentioned him. He says, "What was the highlight of your playing career? Being made captain of Corinthians and becoming the Player of the Year."
Yeah, 1993. It was probably 92-93 was my best years, to be honest.
Pete Mepps.
Yeah, I retired 95, and that 93, I remember Steve Burns wasn't playing then. Les was manager, I think.
Yeah, well, says that. He says, do you think the manager at the time was an absolute legend?
He was. You know, Les is the same now, and Les is involved at Corinthians, and Les's motivation speeches are just amazing. He should pack in building. And go motivate, because, you know, I'd go on the park and think, I'm an okay player. And by the time Les had done his pre-match talk, I thought I was the best player in the Isle of Man. You know, so he'd done it, but, you know, 92, 93, we were playing against the best. You know, Neil Shimmons, your Gareth Jones, down at Rushing it was. And I had a cracking game. And it's something that maybe you guys, I'm not telling you a job because you do a brilliant job, maybe look at, because you used to, at that time, ask a trusted member of each club to nominate a man of the match, and you used to put it at the bottom of the result thing. And for about 7 or 8 weeks, I was man of the match, and I thought I deserve it because I was playing well. But, you know, I was combination player, sort of first team player. But when I look back, I played against Gareth Jones, Eric Nelson, Robert Tier. I never got to play against Keith McQuillan, you know, Johnny Palmer, Tabs Tier, Chris Taggart, all those good players. I had the opportunity to play against them, but 92-93 was my best season. 92. And Les was an inspiration.
Yeah, still is by the sound of it.
Yeah, he is.
We've had a couple of messages in. Just actually, this is probably quite rare for our podcast. Just wanted to say, well done, really, wasn't it? It was Ian Strader. He said, no question, just thanks for the time and effort given when I ran a team. I probably only know a fraction of what you do. And
Ian was running a team and he needed a little bit of help. That's what we're there for at the FA. And it's a shame that we get criticised so much, because we're not there for any other reason. We're there to make football as great as we can, and if we can help, we'll help. But the problem is, certain people's, and there's one individual who does my head in, he just thinks the rules are there to be abused. The rules are there to be adhered to, and that's what we make sure that they happen. We can't just flex them when they want, and I think people have got to sort of realise that, you know, because football needs to improve. I don't mean standard, but the attitude of people needs to improve. And, you know, we can't do it. The FA can't do it. It's the people who are playing it need to.
And along the same lines, Tony Sewell, who I believe is on holiday in Prague.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
He says, apt guest for the 100th podcast, says, legend is a word used too easily in football these days, but for all the work he has done for Manx football over years, he really is. So,
I love Manx football, and thank you, Tony, and wish you well back at Governors, but... that's what they're for, and I keep questioning myself, don't stay too long, you know, I'm coming up to a special birthday in another year or so, and I think, is it the time to bow out, not being big-headed, I think I've got too much enthusiasm and too much knowledge to walk away. So I'm going to hang in there, and you know, my term as president is 3 years, and I'm going to try my damnedest to make sure that football can improve. And I can see in the last year that little things have started to come in for the better of the game, and let's sort of build on them. But everyone's got to buy into it, and I just hope everyone supports FC Alamein.
I do as well, but the enthusiasm will come with those league tables, won't they? They're that tight, you know. If you're not interested in Manx football at this point, you're never going to be, really, are you?
Well, you're not, and let's support it. You know, we've got a game coming up. It's a friendly, the 18th of, let me think now, December. The Alamein senior men against the Alamein under-18s, because obviously right. The under-18s yeah. aren't playing now. They're going to play before the 19th of Jan. I would hope that we could get a good crowd down to see the elite senior players and the elite under-18s, and hopefully we can build on. Be interested to see how it goes with Paul. I hope he remains as Ireland manager, but it's going to be so hard for him to juggle both. Mm. I'm not saying he's going to be manager of FC Alamein, but he's putting so much time and effort in. You know, I don't know how he finds it, to be honest with you. But let's just show the support for Paul, for Lewis, and for everyone else involved to see the Ireland under-18s against the senior men, because something has to change, and there's a good point to start from.
Mm. And finally, yeah, we've got to the ridiculous.
Yeah, Joey Andrews.
Joseph.
Sorry, Joseph. I do apologise. Yeah. Would you rather be a giraffe with no neck or an elephant with no trunk? Thanks in advance.
I don't really know. I've got some neck on me because I'll stick it above the parapet.
Yeah.
Joe's one of those people that likes to criticise Manx football, and I congratulated him a couple of weeks ago. I said, good to see you back. But yeah, that's another... You know, there are negative people out there, it doesn't matter. I'm not really quite with that one, but I'll just stay as I am. I'm quite happy.
Right, well, we've got you in as the godfather of Manx punditry. It'd be rude of us not to look ahead to this week's football fixtures. It's starting in the Canolife Premier League, full house, or five games, as we've got. In the big game, your club, Corinthians, take on Laxey. Now, if we'd said this at the start of the season, we'd have said, all day, Corinthians won't win, but Laxey... already surpassed last year's total of points. I've played really well against Russian, took a point off Peel. This won't be a walk in the park for Corinthians, will it?
No, it won't be. And, you know, Corinthians have been a bit stop and start with the games, but, you know, fair play to Johnny. You know, what a job. You know, I know you do your football writers manager of the year. Give it to him now. Give it to him because, you know, he's had all his top players taken away from him.
Nine players he's lost.
Exactly. And he's still chipping away and... great signing in Jordan Cooper.
Yeah.
There are other players there who are playing way above. I've watched them twice this year, and against Peel they had to work hard, but they showed that they're right in there. You know, against Corinthians, it's up at Ballofletcher, isn't it? So, you know, it's a great playing surface up there, and fair play to Peter Mark and Stan for what they've done, Peter Cannell. But I've got to edge it towards Corinthians, but, you know, Laxey now are right up there. I'm delighted because, am I right, this time last year they didn't have a point on the board?
I'm not sure about that. But
I don't think they had a point on the board.
They only finished with 15, and yeah. They've got 16 now, so and we're only a quarter way through the season. So, it's, as we said, he's lost nine of that squad.
Yeah,
he's brought in a couple, but he's just turned water into wine, really.
And it's a great club. You know, the junior setup is brilliant. The senior is a bit unfair because players sort of move away from them, but I think it was the Douglas Royal Laxey encounter 5-4 at Glen Road that sort of that got them on it, and I'm delighted because you know, it's a club that's put a lot into Manx football, and they're reaping the benefit with old John Boy in charge.
Without wishing to anger Mets, do you think Laxey can get anything out of this, Dave?
I reckon they probably could. I know you always like to say I sit on the fence, and that sort of stuff. So with that in mind, I'm not going to say it's a draw, but I think Corinthians will edge it, but I think it's going to be quite a few goals in this one. They're going to have to work hard for it.
Laxey are scoring goals.
Yeah, eight last week.
Yeah, they are. They get them from across the park. I know Jordan's a top scorer in the league, Jordan Cooper, but they seem to be sharing it out a lot, which is, you know, a sign of a team playing good football, isn't it? So,
well, it is, and defensively good. Rob Slingers and goal is a character. I think Burnsy's suspended for this game because obviously he got sent off against Field, but Tom Smith, Cameron Lee is playing as good as I've ever seen, and there's like good form in there for Corinthians, and you know, actually want this Railway Cup. And I watched them on Monday a little bit against the Ireland under-18s. So well ran and presented. You know, they came out, it's the kit and everything, the tops. That's all part of it now, you know, in Manx football. And Johnny's done a great job there. Mm-hmm. Really has.
I'm going to go with Metz on this one. I think home win.
Yeah.
So it means I won't be allowed down the Glen Road any time soon.
You've got a stay of execution for that headline about Screech.
Big game at the bottom on Saturday. It's Ballaclone. And sees Ramsey take on Douglas Royal. Maps too early in the season to call this a 6-pointer? Or?
No, I think it is a 6-pointer. I think Ramsey will be okay at the end of the season.
Goal in 5 games is not encouraging, though, is it?
It isn't encouraging, and you know, you sort of look at it that Nick White, who trained with Corinthians throughout the summer, and then he went and signed for Ayr. Michael Valerga's transferred
to
Ayr.
Andy Cleater's gone to Youthy.
Andy Cleater was probably their best player last year. He was incredible. So there's something
not quite
right there. You need to get your finger on it quickly and try and stop that. But
it's one of those games there, so if they lose it, suddenly it becomes, we're in trouble now, isn't it? I know we were saying Paul Rose are at the bottom with no points. But Ramsey could so easily get sucked back into this, and it's whoever wins this will have that springboard to maybe move away a little bit from the bottom, won't they?
I think Ramsey will win it because I've had good information that Royal are missing a shed load this week.
Right.
So it's a bit of a problem for them, and they've got some really talented young players there. But you know, it's that sort of thing we had a couple of years ago when we were going for the league, and then Danny just sat him down and said, listen, if you want a challenge for the league, you can't keep going on these weekends away. And here we are. I think Douglas Royal are going to be depleted this way, so I have to go for Ramsey.
Yeah, I think Ramsey should be too strong in this one. Let's hope that it'll play a part. But they haven't won any games yet at all, have they, Ramsey? So this will be the one that they've targeted. So I think it should be good enough for the win.
Royal win for Ramsey then, what are you saying?
Ramsey
to win. Right, Douglas Athletic versus St Mary's, a South Douglas derby of sorts. Should be a comfortable away win for the Saints in this one, Tony, but Douglas Athletic on that pitch, you know, it's very tight, isn't it?
Well, it is tight and they play it well. I know this year we were 1-0.
It was 1-1 at half time.
Yeah, 1-0 up and then it was 1-1 and then we won 11-1.
11-2,
sorry. So, you know, and I look at the demolisher job that Geordie's did down there couple of years ago as well, so it can go against them. Craig Purvis is another person who you know, works hard for the club. You know, that again, there's good players there. When you look at Marty Cowan, Steve Cowan, you look at James Ayr, sorry that Matthew Quirk left them, come to us, but you know, he's in the Ireland team and he just wanted to challenge himself a little bit more. Mikey Collister, big fan of him. I think Douglas Athletic should just have enough in this one to sort of, if you like, challenge them. But St Mary's, they won the league there last year, didn't they? And St Mary's, you know, Alex Harrison, look at the spine, Alex Harrison, Jack McVeigh, Frank Jones, and now Dan Hattersley, who's an absolute nightmare to deal with in the Ayr. It's at the moment pointing to St Mary's that they're going to possibly be involved in the league again at the top.
Yeah, it's hard to look past a St Mary's win. I watched their game against Geordies last week, and Adam Adebayo got sent off and Hattersley went off injured early on, so it'd be interesting to see whether he's back or not for this. But you would probably think in a game like this they should be too strong anyway. I think St Mary's will win.
Just you say Adam, but Matty Kent Lloyd's been doing a good job up front for them. He scored a few goals in the last few weeks. And it's not a bad option to come off the bench.
You got Darren Hutchin kicking around, know, whatever team he's playing for, because, you know, he's another one that chops around. But, you know, Alex has done a great job. You know, and it's funny, someone suggested to me, was it last week, you know, if Paul John stands down, who would you have as manager then? don't know, how long's a piece of string? And said, well, I think Alex Harris can do a job, but Alex got a little bit in him yet to be playing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Still a young pup.
Yeah, still a pup. Paul Rose versus Peel on the adjacent pitch at Springfield Road. This one, again, looks to be a home win for me. Dave?
Away win. Again, I can't really see past Peel winning this one, but Pulley, you just never know. Maybe you've been talking about that heroic game back in the cup. Yeah. Can they rekindle a bit of that magic? You never know. But yeah, Peel will be hurting after that defeat last week to Corinthians, so they'll be well up for this, I think.
Peel have been hot and cold again this season. Mm-hmm. They just never seem to quite get that consistency right. It's like a bad kettle. The water's never quite.
It is. Like, Falky's a great person to have. It's down to the players. Why has it happened? Don McGreevy's just come back in. Dom's a great player, but he's got to get match fit. Tom Wood had a nasty injury, so Tom's back in that team now. Luke Doherty was missing, he got married, didn't he? So he was missing there. And the right hand side, you know, Eric Kelly was there, he's not, and there's a little few things going on there. A bit uncertain who to play. Midfield, Daniel Bell was struggling with injury. Matthew Woods has been playing in that position. Then you go for the dream lot, don't you? Yeah. You've got Simo on that left-hand side. And I watched him last week. I don't know how many times he crossed in. And if Sean Doyle had been there, they could have won about 10-0. They just need a number nine. They need a Hawkey. Mm. They need a Chris Hawke.
Sean Kelly.
Sean Kelly.
If they'd held on to him. He, last year, I think, was... We talk about the front three. Obviously, he didn't have Dan last season. But he was almost the one that held that together. You had Rhys and Lee... off the foil off Sean, but Sean did the hard yards. Sean held the ball up. Sean didn't maybe score as many goals as the other two, but he was almost the key in that three for me. I don't know what you thought. He was the one that was the pivotal.
Definitely, yeah. He pulled it together all nicely, and like you got Rhys in there, but it's different. Where do you play Rhys? Rhys is a goal scorer, but he's a floater, but he likes to run at players. He's tricky. And then Lee Gale is an absolute nightmare to mark. And I just wonder if Lee Gale could play that nine through the middle.
I think I've seen him do it once, but he does. He's a strong lad, isn't he? And quick. He could be the key to that.
Yeah, not telling, because I was speaking to Falky this morning, and I put Matthew Woods on that right hand side in the middle. If they can get Mark Kelly back in there, put him there. But they just need someone who can read it. You know, Rhys has got so much energy, but...
he always finds space as well.
He does, he's clever. He's only 24, but I just look at Lee Gale and I just think, down that wing, you're handy, you cross it over and there's no one there to finish it for you. You know, you've got Ryan Holdaway or Billy Kenyick, but, you know, Falky hasn't sort of ran with them. Another big plus, if he was fit, was Kieran Christian, but, you know, Kieran's not been about because he's scored some... Yeah. So important goals.
Probably
from last
big game player, isn't it?
Massive,
and experienced, as you said.
I
think we'll go for a Peel win. Anything, Pulley get anything out of this?
No, I don't think so. Steve, as I say, I think it's fine at heart as player manager. If Marky came in, it adds to it. They're young lads, they're feisty, but a couple of games that I've watched, they keep getting themselves into trouble by ending up in the sing bin. Sing bins for dissent, it's controllable, so if you don't pass comment, you stay on the park. But Pulley's important thing is to take the points away from the teams that are with them, and you know, against Peel, they know it's going to be tough.
Douglas High School boys take on Rushen at Blackberry Lane. Rushen are still obviously well in the Railway Cup mix, Dave. They need 3 points from this one, though, don't they?
Yeah, they had a good second half showing against Pulley last week, didn't they? I think Pulley did well at first half. It was 0-0, wasn't it? But I think this one might be similar. I think Old Boys will push them hard for a bit. And I was speaking to Robbie Ward the other day. Jack Townsend is really impressive for Old Boys this season. A good young talent. I think they're happy they've got a bit more of a settled side now than they did early in the season. But I still think Rushen will be too strong for this. They've got a great side there.
Liam Cowan's got them playing well this season, hasn't he?
He's got them playing well. Start of the season, I've mentioned it on the radio, that there was uncertainty of what was going on when a few players had left. But he's done a great job. Jamie Johnston, I coached Jamie as a kid. And Jamie's a great player, and glad to see him in the Ireland squad. And also, Mikey Williams seems to have got his excitement on the pitch under control, because there's no point in getting sent off or getting involved in anything. So he's got it sorted. Defensively, Alex Maitland's one of the players of the season for me at the moment.
And I have to mention Jordan Corkle as well. He's played well alongside.
Jordan's good. He, at the start of the season, he wasn't quite getting in there. And when you think of it, he's come from good stock, hasn't he? Stevie Corkle is absolutely unbelievable as a centre back and stuff.
And he's about a foot taller than his dad as well.
He's about a foot taller and brilliant on the motorbike as well. Yeah. He's just been away an event in America, but with Alex alongside him, it works well.
Yeah.
You know, the fullbacks, Ryan Cooley and stuff like that, they go and bomb up that line. Jack Saxon, I haven't seen him much this year.
No, I think he's playing combo. Yeah,
yeah, so Jack would be a big plus, but Liam's got them fit, and the players are playing for Liam, which is great to see. But old boys, it's a shame the way things have gone a little bit for them. And Jack Townsend, you picked out on, it was 2 years ago, it was pre-season friendly, and I saw this young lad right inside at the ball, and I thought, who's that? Says Jack Townsend. I says, he can play. Mm-hmm. And actually, he started his apprenticeship, and I worked with him quite a few times, and he's a cracking lad. Mm-hmm. But what a player he is. But, you know, it's important, people like John Quirk and Robbie Ward and other people in there. Kinga. Mm-hmm. Kinga's lost a shedload of weight. He's just got married. But I said, come on, Martin, get yourself back there. But they're not biting to it, but I believe that there's rufflings that the Stewart boys might be showing a little bit of interest in coming back, but at the moment they're holding it. But it's tough times for Liam Buckley, and he's just got to get on with what he's got.
Yeah, fair play for Liam sticking at it as well. Definitely, he lost a lot of players in the summer.
Definitely.
He's done well at bringing a few, like Dean Kinley and Ash Egan and that from Maloo. And
Tom Chattel, Johnny Quirk.
Johnny Quirk, great signing. If they keep plugging away, I'm sure they'll finish comfortably in mid-table. Last game in the... Well, that is the last game in the Premier League. I forget, there's only five these
five
days.
Five years tonight, man. I can forget that as well.
JCK Division 2. There's six games in the second tier on Saturday, all 2 o'clock kickoffs, of course. Game Hattie's going to Dave, Oncom versus St John's. Probably catches the eye this week, doesn't
it? Yeah, it should be a cracker, this one. Obviously, Oncom have gone under the radar a bit, and we've already mentioned it a few times. They're top and doing well. They just keep churning out the results, don't they?
Yeah.
They've got a good side there. St John's, though, this will be tough for Onken to beat them. I think they're obviously one of the sides that have done well already this season. There's a lot to play for in this. I don't think either side are obviously really going to want to lose. So it could be quite a tense game. Might end in a draw.
What do you think, Mebs? I reckon this will be a classic 7-4 or something along those lines.
Could be with St John's. I don't know if you're aware. Adam Watson's stood down as manager.
Is he?
When I say stood down, he's going to live in Dubai, or he's going to work in Dubai.
Right.
I think he's got a week, maybe 2 weeks to say ta-ra and thank you very much. And they did well to get him because he was alongside us when we finished second in the Premier League with Andy Thornton, and he's absolutely brilliant. I've watched them on a couple of Friday night games, and they're a good side. Callum Taggart, I believe, is going to take over the managership.
Right.
But again, you look at Winnie, Richard Wynne, been scoring goals, you know, good mate of mine, Sam Ingham, is there at the back. You've got Andrew Chadwick in there. You've got Rothwell. You've got other players who
are
right in it. Exactly, exactly. And it's a shame, really, that St John's were relegated on a mistake.
Mm.
That's what it was. But rules are rules, and we had no choice. But as I say, I watched Duncan recently against Braddon last week, and they're a good outfit. And crikey, Onken was actually the team as a kid, a six-year-old, I used to go down and watch because my mum had let me go down to Onken Park. So I've always had a soft spot for Onken, and the place has never changed. And behind now, Ocean Views, John Kinley's in there, Chris's brother, and they get sausages and chips and everything else. So there you go, St John's. Don't run away too quickly, they'll look after you.
So you think win it?
Jonas.
Jonas? I think the Onken... They seem to be on a roll at the moment, although they do have the
moods. They got Moody in there.
Tendency to self capitulate a bit.
Yeah, implode a little bit. I'm going to go for a draw on this one.
I reckon I'm going to go with the home win. Mighty O. So you've got the full lot there. One of us will get this right. The next game sees Unimills take on Braddon. Now, Unimills sort of licking their wounds a little bit after last week's trip to Andrews. They were very confident going into it, so it'll be a bit of an eye-opener for the boys there. I think they thought they could have got something out of that A game. But, yeah, another big game from this week. They have to just pick themselves and get on with it against Braddon, don't they?
Coming through thick and fast, aren't they? And Unimills were 4-2 up against it.
Yeah. Last 20 minutes this couple, they conceded four goals. It's ridiculous.
You know, amazing.
Foxy would have been doing his fruit.
Yeah.
Well, he would be doing the river dance. But, you know, against Braddon, fair play. let's look at this 12 months ago.
Yeah.
They didn't have a first team and we were worried about the club. And they've got it back together. They've got good, young, talented players. The bit I don't get is a lot of them that left have come back. You know, which I don't get, but that's Manx football for you. You know, Joe Andrews is a really good player. When they won the treble, he was one of the stars. So, you know, he's a big plus for them coming in there. As I say, Mark O'Neill ran the show for them recently. You've got Mark Watterson's son in there as well. So there's a lot of promising, good young players. But I think against Union Mills, I think Union Mills are my tip for that second spot.
Right.
I really do think they're going to take it, and I think they'll just beat Braddon narrowly.
I agree. Okay.
Yeah, I think that'll be a close game again. Colby versus Maloo, Southern Derby at the Station Fields. Dave, Colby should be favourites for this one. They, of course, one of those teams we've mentioned before in that top 6-8.
They've
like to throw that hat into the promotion mix.
Yeah, but Colby floundered a little bit the last couple of weeks. Obviously, they lost to Braddon last week, which is a tough result for them. But Maloo, on the other hand, they've had a very tough start to the season. They obviously had a tough summer, but they seem to be... they're not getting all the results, but the performances seem to be getting better for them. So you know they might sneak something out of this, but to be honest, I think Colby will be too strong.
Perhaps you tipped Carl Hickey for the silver boot. That's looking a very wise decision at this.
Do you think
point.
That was a bit of a wild one, or
no? Right. I think you just thought about it rather than us that were just like, picking him out. I know he's top of the scoring charts, and thanks largely to eight goals in the opening day of the season. But he might just give him the edge in this one. You'd think, wouldn't you?
Well, he will. I watched Carl last year. I can't remember who they were. Geordie's, I think it was. Geordie's in the cup.
Mm.
And I watched him and I thought, what a player. Because he's a, I'll tell you what.
But was a very decent centre-half.
But as a centre-forward, he reads it so well, his runs are good. He's ready for anticipating for the balls over the top. And he caused a few problems for Geordies. But Maloo, I just give Maloo massive credit, because at the start of the season, you just wondered where it was going to go because players were leaving. You know, when you look at Dean Kinley, Ash Egan, who left. You know, Dean's been there, and Dean is a fantastic footballer, but he's moved to Old Boys now and playing in sticks. But I just think Maloo will be beaten by Colby. I just think Colby have got too many good players in there, and I don't think Colby are going to get involved in the top four, but certainly they're going in the right way compared to last year when, what was it, they played six and lost six.
Yeah.
At the start of the season, so
and then,
done well.
But then we're unbeatable.
Yeah,
it's one of those. But I think pardon the sort of terminology, but the banana skin team for those that are promotion chasing, aren't they? That you wouldn't fancy playing Colby, even if they're not in that mix.
No.
They'll always can put a performance on, can they?
And what a facility as well.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
The new stand there now, it's ace, brilliant.
Foxdale versus Michael, another sort of derby of sorts, a Western derby at Billy Goat Park. Now we're looking out the window. I don't want to spoil Dave Reed's the weather, but it is quite. It's grey, the skies. Do you think this one will be on, first of all, Dave?
I think it's touch and go, to be perfectly honest. The weather's not looking fantastic, but if it does go ahead, Foxdale will be favourites. Michael, you know, they caught the eye with some of the signings. Nick Hurt still hasn't managed to get a full team out there. You know, Pekka's banging in a few goals, but yeah, they just need a settled side. So I think the home side will be too strong.
Maps, have you been surprised that Michael struggled a bit this season? Or?
No, not really. Big fan of Nick Hurt, great footballer. I forgot him in my Ireland top 11.
Yeah.
He would be right in there as well. Rick is in there as well. But when I heard about Callum going, Callum for 2 years had been a bit in and out through injury. Pekka could still play for the Ireland if he wanted, but that's his choice. If he doesn't want to train twice a week or relax or whatever. But I always thought that Callum wouldn't be there very long, and that's proved to be the point. And Pekka has been there and just cracked on, but you know, two or three players that they did sign were like vets. And I just thought
Johnny Holland, if he gets fit,
I worked with his dad, and I think Johnny's done, you know, injury and stuff. He's self-employed, so he can't afford to pick up any injuries. But no, you know, Hurtie's took the job and he lives in Michael, and that's great, but I don't think he got the players that he wanted. And I have to say, Agent Rashid's thing, it was fine. He's great. You know, when I read some of it, it's really funny.
Yeah.
Funny man. But I never got sort of sucked in by it. I just didn't think it would quite go to plan, and the way it's looking at the moment, it hasn't.
Yeah, but could they upset Foxtel here? Because obviously Foxtel have been one of the teams that struggled the most with this wet weather in recent weeks. They just struggle to get consistent run of games, don't they?
That's the problem. Castle Rushen, they're doing this development down there with the school, and the grand staff are over and are looking to do some work on Foxtel's pitch because they know there's a bit of a problem there, and hopefully they'll get some funding from Football Foundation to improve that. So yeah, you're right. If they're going to challenge... It's been the same for the last two or three years, haven't it? They're on it,
yeah.
And then bang, the fixtures stop, and then they just sort of lose it. But John Roberts has done a good job.
Yeah,
they've
got
good players there, and you know I think they'll win it. When you've got people like Jay Chatwood who are going to score bags of goals for you, Ricky Newsom, they've got goal scorers everywhere, and Steve Bettridge is another player who's improving every season and keeps it all together at the back. So I have to go for Foxtel, I think.
Ramsey UCA take on Douglasson District up at School Rigori, Dave. This should be a home win, but Douglasson District, as we say every flipping week, have a result in the locker, don't they?
Obviously, Aaron Delaney is the man in charge now. They went up against Foxtel last week and they lost 5-0, so it was always going to be a bit of a baptism of fire, that one. They may, with Youthy not getting the results they want at the moment, they may just fancy the chances with this one, D&D, but... I just think that the Northerners will have too much about them. I think they'll get back to winning ways.
Maps, Youthy, edge this one.
Yeah,
maybe
we'll do.
The odd goal in seven or something like that.
Yeah, we'll do. I didn't pick them last year and I got absolutely savaged. They hate me at Youthy. Unbelievably, I just hope agent Rashid can get it together and maybe ask them to be nice to me. Certainly Mark McGlurg, who seems to have an awful lot to say. But against Douglasson District, you know, they're a really good club. And unfortunately, at the moment, the pitch isn't playing how they wanted to because, you know, TT's so big and the pitch has got damaged and stuff. It limits them a little bit. But again, they give it them all, you know, and let's just see if they can pull one off. And they do, don't they?
Yeah.
A couple of years, they get involved in there. But Ramsey Youth Centre, if they're going to get promoted or even in the Paul Henry, they need wins. Yeah. Draws are no good.
Jim's take on Ayr in the last game in JCK Division 2 on Saturday. Again, this Ayr will be buzzing after last week's win over Union Mills and should have enough to take the points away from Drumroad this Saturday, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, complete opposite ends of the table, aren't they here? Jim's, I don't actually know who's in charge there now after...
Meps?
I think it's the troops, from what I hear, and that the players were doing it amongst themselves because... you know, Tony Sewell was down there, did a good job, but it's like anything, when the results don't go their way, they look for an excuse and, you know, let's pick on Tony sort of thing, and he's gone. But, you know, Jim's, the combination had a great start to the season, and I heard that there's quite a few of the first team players who'd rather play in the combi than play in the first team.
Well, look at one of the scorers for that Jim's combi was Mark Connor, who could be playing in the first team.
Yeah.
So. Could be playing in the first division.
Yeah.
But when you look back at their history, 86, 87, winning the treble and stuff, and again, I don't know what they can do to make things better. You know, junior football, start it and see if they can get some players in that way. But when you look at the players that have come from there, Dan Simpson, Pecker, and you think to yourself, well, you know, you get them, but unfortunately now players want to play, you know, for the top teams, and you know that's what's happened to Jim, so I expect them to be beaten comfortably by
Ayr. Yeah, well, we have to say obviously Jim's did get their first win of the season last week. They beat Michael 3-2, Marcus Clegg, and 2 own goals, so so a good result for them. You know, that'll be a big confidence boost for them, but yeah, I can't really see them getting anything against Ayr, especially on the back of that comeback last week, so tangible to win.
It's my favourite time of the week, Combi Corner and Dave Reads the Weather. We'll start with the former Dave.
Oh, God. No pressure. So St Mary's and Corinthians are pulled further clear in Combi 1 after beating their rivals last week. The Saints lead the way after thrashing Geordie 6-0. Jamie Skillen led the way with a hat-trick. Carson Warrender got a couple and Darren Smethurst also scored. And Corinthians got the better of Peel 2-0. That's the goals from Jordan Cowan and Phil Kelly. Elsewhere, 6th place Laxey and 7th place Dafka played out a 2-2 draw, but Old Boys were stunned 3-1 by Royal, which is the latter's first win of the season. Simon Dooley, Titus Craig, and Kev Ballard scored.
Kev Ballard, what a man! He's racked up the appearances for Royal, isn't he?
He's playing for the Masters side. I was talking to him last night. He's playing for the Masters side on Sunday, Douglas Royal against Corinthians. So,
Kev's a good that'll player. Be a bit tasty, that one.
Yeah. No, it's all played in the best spirits.
The other game in Combe 1, Ramsey, you've got level on points with Old Boys after beating Castletown 7-3. Fira Egan, he scored a bucket full last year in the Combe. He got a hat trick. Martin Tor, the evergreen, got a brace. Rowan Gale and Jonathan Lee also scored.
Jogger.
Still there.
Rolling back the years.
Combe 2, with leaders Youthy not playing, D&D closed the gap to 2 points thanks to a hard fought 1-0 win away at Foxdale. Getting the winner in that game, it was Mark Quirk. Is he always tipping?
Yeah.
He's going to play the first team.
I thought he might be trying his chances on the first team. Right?
Don't know. It's up to whoever's manager. But he used to play for Corinthians, Quirky. He's a good player. What is he, 24 or something like that? 23, 24.
In his prime.
Exactly.
Jims and Braddon remain third and fourth after beating Michael and Colby 6-1 and 3-1 respectively. Netting for Jims, Mark Connor, we've just mentioned him, he got a hat-trick. Mike Travers,
the Blairer himself.
That's it. He got a brace and Paul Gallagher got the other goal. And then for Braddon, it was Adam Fair, Jamie Spicer and Aaron Fields getting the goals for them. Elsewhere, Onkin edged past Malou by the odd goal in 7 at the Niverson Stadium, while Union Mills thrashed United 5-0.
I believe Bernard Aspel scored for Onkin. Was an absolute worldie.
It was.
We saw on Twitter. Or that's what he was telling everyone at work, anyway.
He is a legend.
Billy Coulter, perhaps you've seen his name, he's scoring a lot of goals for that Onkin Combe, isn't he? So I think he'll be one to watch in the next few.
Definitely.
He scored a lot at junior level as well. I remember his name.
Yeah, come from good stock as well. So, it's great. There's some real promising young players coming through, and I think it's the ideal time for anyone like that to stake a claim for themselves and possibly FC Alamo.
The weather, Dave?
I'm afraid it's not looking too good, mate.
Oh, no.
You said it's cloudy. Yeah, it is. It's mostly dry now, but there's going to be heavy rain overnight, which is going to continue into Saturday, and it's going to be coupled with some potentially strong winds. So I think there'll probably be a few postponements tomorrow. I don't think there'll be loads, but I think there'll be...
Maps, do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I've looked at it. I know Peel have offered their pitch to Paul Rose if there's a problem. I just hope that it doesn't affect the Premiership too much because, you know, that Railway Cup is the one we're looking at.
Is there a contingency plan in place if it doesn't go on Boxing Day?
No, not really. It's not a question. We haven't looked at it. I've got all sorts of permutations down, but I'll revisit it a couple of weeks' time and just see what we can do. But you've got the FA Cup starts in January. You've got the Junior Ireland game is coming up before the 19th. And then it's right the way through. So I just wonder if it's going to be ending up a couple of years ago where it's March, April, whatever. It's a tough time, but I've got a big table in my kitchen, so I'll have a little look what we can do.
Mets, thanks so much for coming.
Just before you go, can I say a big thank you to everyone at Isle of Man Newspapers, yourself, Andy and Dave, also to Eric for having to do Hattie, who does an amazing job. The new kid on the block, Rory Poole, I've read some of his reports, he's absolutely brilliant. And to Chris Cave, as I'm a president's hat on, without you guys, we wouldn't be able to, be able to publicise what happens in Manx football. So a big, big thank you to you all for what you do.
No, I think it's our pleasure, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes right back to you. Manx football would be a much poorer place without you, for everything
we
do.
We all try our best.
I was going to say good luck for the rest of the season, is what we say to our guests usually, but I think it's good luck for the next 3 years.
If they keep me there.
Thanks again for coming in, Dave. 100th episode, I suppose we should sort of end with some sort of poignant soundbite, but I can't really think of one.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's still going to be listening by that way, so it's okay. But here's to the next 100, I guess.
Oh, Jesus. right, until next week.
Ta-ta for now.